Welcome to the Transformative Dance Podcast, a show where you will hear inspiring stories from leading dancers, dance educators, choreographers, studio owners, and more. Hear about their career challenges and highlights and how the power of dance has manifested as resilience and transformation in their lives. My name is Melanie Gard, dance studio owner, dance educator, and fellow entrepreneur, and I'll be your host as we uncover together the transformative power of dance. Welcome to the Transformative Dance Podcast. Today, we are thrilled to introduce Vivian Pearson, a versatile freelance writer based in the vibrant community of Byron Bay. Vivian's byline has graced prestigious publications such as The Good Weekend, The Sydney Morning Herald, The Age, The Saturday Paper, ABC, SBS, Mind Food and Good Food, among many others. Vivian's writing spans a broad spectrum covering lifestyle, parenting, politics, food, and news-related features. In 2019 and 2020, she was awarded the inaugural Walkley Grant for freelance journalists, producing a compelling series on school fundraising. Before embarking on her writing journey, Vivian enjoyed careers in health as an occupational therapist and in research as an assistant and administrator. She is also a tutor for the Australian Writers Centre's Freelance Writing Stage 1 course and the creator of a course on finding your opinion writing voice. In addition to her writing, Vivian is a skilled photographer, particularly for dance schools, and a qualified ballet teacher, having trained under Lorraine Blackburn OAM. She danced with the Heidelberg and District Ballet School for many years, along with the Heidelberg Dance Ensemble. Vivian's love for dance and her diverse experiences enrich her storytelling, making her a unique voice in the world of freelance writing. We're excited to delve into your journey today and insights, Vivian. Welcome to the podcast. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you so much, and for that lovely introduction. It always sounds a bit overwhelming when someone says it like that.
I think it's nice sometimes to sit back and really like hear what you've done, what you've achieved. You know, you've worked across many different sectors and obviously had that experience in dance as a young person. And that's what we're going to explore a little bit with you today, is how that experience of dance as a child and a young adult, how that informed where you went with your career, because it's been really diverse. I know that you've also travelled a lot around the world. I was privileged enough to receive some of your wonderful letters when you were travelling. They were always such a great insight into your travels. But let's start with how you started off in a dance class, Vivian. Like, what took you to dance when you were a little girl?
Yeah, now there's a classic story here, and Mel, you have probably heard this story many times, so I apologise for telling you again, but it is a good one. It is one worth retelling. So my starting dance story began when I was the tender age of 3, and the story goes that my older sister, whose name is Kristen, who was 5, I think she'd just started school and she'd maybe heard of other kids who were doing ballet. And so she asked Mum if she could start ballet. And but she was nervous to do this. I think it was probably, you know, these days kids do so many activities, you know, from very young, but that wasn't the case when we were young. So she was very nervous. So the story goes that I went along to help her feel confident to start the ballet class. How I managed that as a 3-year-old, I don't know. I guess it was having some company, you know, knowing that someone else was going along. And yes, I wouldn't be surprised if my mum was quite happy for both of us to be in an activity at the same time, because at that stage she had she would have had my younger sister very little. So she was probably quite happy for the two of us to be occupied for an hour. Yeah. And the story goes, sorry, I'll just say one extra bit. The story from, so that's the story that is around in the dance circles, and Miss B, Lorraine Blackburn, used to love telling that story. But the story in my family is that I would come home from that 1 hour of ballet Saturday morning. It was probably a 9 o'clock class, and I would come home and I would find the first piece of carpet that was right inside the front door, and I would lie down on it and fall asleep.
Oh, you're exhausted. Well, I just wrote that down. 1 hour of ballet for 3 to 5 year olds. That is a lot, isn't it?
When
you think about it, like at my school, we have classes for 3, 4, and 5 year olds. Well, the 5 year olds do 45 minutes, but our 3 and 4 year olds only do half an hour slots. And because we find that that's the span, that's where they're at. But
I think that's perfect. When I first started teaching preschoolers dance, ooh, 1 hour was a long time.
Such a long time, wasn't it? You sort of got to that 45 minute mark.
Yeah, 45, 50. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I remember that. I remember my first ever dance class I taught. I'd been helping with another teacher, and I turned up, and Miss B, just for people listening, our dance teacher we always referred to as Miss B with great affection, and she said, oh, she said, you're going to have to take the class today. And I said, what do you mean? She said, oh, well, such and such is sick, but it was Parents' Day. And, I mean, honestly, I had no idea what I was doing. I can't imagine what I did, but for an hour with these teeny, like, tiny little humans, and I was only 16. Yeah. Goodness me.
Yeah.
Anyway, I can't.
Now, I know this is a podcast and no one can see our faces, but my face is like wide eyed and oh my goodness. And then thrown in the deep end like that.
Oh, absolutely. Like, we really were thrown in the deep end, weren't we? It was just sort of sink or swim when you think about it. And even that experience of you as a little three-year-old going into that class really was a different time, wasn't it, where it's just like, okay, off you go and do that.
Yes.
And little Vivian obviously loved it though, even though you were very tired.
I obviously loved it. I obviously put my all into it to make it so tired. And the other really lovely part of that story is that my very first teacher for, you know, that first class and probably, you know, that first year was Laurel, who is Miss B's daughter.
Our
friend. So she was my first ever teacher. And then, you know, like most people, I respond well to compliments, and apparently I had a beautiful pointed foot.
Yes, and again, for anyone listening, Vivian is renowned for her dainty, tiny little feet that are just divinely perfect for ballet. So we were all always very envious of your gorgeous little feet.
I'm sure that kept me going as well.
Yeah.
As, you know, my sister needing me for, you know, security. Her emotional support sister, and my mum being keen to, you know, get some of the energy.
Yeah, definitely. So just going back to the not to harp on about your feet, but they are gorgeous. But so that piece of a teacher identifying your feet as something special about you, how much do you think that, like, what sort of role that played in then you pursuing your love of ballet?
I have never thought about it like that. It's a story that's done the rounds, and it always gives me a nice little happy glow when the story is told, because I was, you know, I was far from your model ballerina in all other fronts. You know, my feet remained tiny. You know, I can wear kids' size shoes. you know, I was I'm very short. You know, I was never your archetypal thin, tall, willowy, flexible dancer. You know, my flexibility never got beyond, you know, a very pushed splits on the left side, which is very inconvenient because anytime choreography demanded the splits, it was always on the right side, and I just literally could not go there. So I think having that one little element of me that was special, I think, probably did help. And, you know, the truth is that I just kept doing ballet because that's what I did. You know, I think 70s were a different time in terms of kids' activities. I obviously enjoyed it enough. It wasn't, you know, it was in my teenage years. I considered a couple of times stopping dancing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think in those early years, and even then when I did continue, I think just having that little individual, slightly special thing. I think it was quite powerful. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I do talk to my students about that, you know, because you've got your classic, I've got a beautiful young girl that has these stunning feet on point, and everybody's just like, oh, look at her feet, they're just divine. But she has to work twice as hard to stay up on her point shoes because they are so hyperextended, all those things. And I'm always really mindful of talking to each kid about like something special about them, because I feel the same as you, Viv. You know, there was a few things about me that I guess, you know, again, I wasn't the best dancer or anything like that, but I had lovely long legs and I had a nice extension, and that was always complimented. And
yeah,
so I think that is a good thing to think about as when we're working with young people, like finding the things that are unique about them without necessarily, I mean, it's hard, isn't it? You treading that line of like not wanting to point out features of particular body types or anything like that, but finding something that's unique about that person that they can feel good about when they come into class, you know, I can jump.
So, and I think that helps counter that classic, particularly ballet.
Mm.
And other dance styles have their own, you know, kind of traditional looks or strengths. So, yeah, I think finding that little individual thing is really valuable and powerful. And I remember as a young adult, so I was probably in my 20s, I was probably still teaching or early teaching, because I didn't start teaching until I was in my 20s, and the Australian Ballet, and I'm not going to be able to remember her name, although I can picture her on stage, the first quarter ballet member who was, I think she was 5 foot tall.
Right.
She may have been slightly taller,
uh-huh.
But she was short for a professional ballerina, and mm-hmm. she had curves. And she was amazing.
Mm.
And she went on, from memory, she went on to progress through the company, and she was a dynamo on stage. And you know, a little bit like in, you know, one of the ballets that we saw together at the recent anniversary gala of our school, you know, the Ballet Ebony Fantasy, and it had different short sections with different types of dancers. Mm. And you know, I was in the little cuties, the four little cuties. And, you know, it was still as skilled dancing as the big, tall seniors who had legs up to their ears and, you know, easing jumps and amazing extension, but it allowed me to play to my strengths, which was little petty allegro and, you know, presenting well and, just, you know, putting my all into some gorgeous choreography, you know.
Yeah. And so that's so interesting, isn't it, like for you looking at, because I was always, oh, I'm too tall to do ballet. So, yeah. And your perception was, I'm too short. No, I would have looked at you and thought, oh, Vivi's perfect for ballet. Yeah. She's little. So it's interesting, isn't it, how we all come to these experiences with different sort of, you know, ideas of what the ideal is.
Yeah. And I think that is broadening. I hope. I wonder if it started to go backwards a bit, but it certainly did broaden for a while at least, and hopefully it's continuing to.
And it's sort of that thing of like, you can't be what you can't see, can you?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, just this, all this, I mean, I don't want to bring in American politics to this podcast, but I'm going to.
Go for it.
But so obviously with Kamala Harris now in the race to become the first potentially black president and be a female in that role, that's just so powerful, isn't it? Like that idea of then what that example that sets for young girls, and I love that idea of being able to see it, and then that actually sets the precedent for the future.
Yes, totally.
Mm-hmm. So going back to your time as a young dancer, you talked a little bit about how your interest potentially waned a little bit as a teenager, and you did consider giving up. Talk to me about that. What was that for you?
I had a couple of stints. I mean, you know, adolescence is a tumultuous time and you start to question, well, who am I and what do I like doing? And I'd done dance because my older sister did dance. You know, it's not exactly the most personalized intention for being involved in the activity. And, you know, obviously that's also the time where, you know, all of that stuff is starting to bear out. You know, some people are starting to think, oh, I'd like to do this seriously and is that possible? And those sorts of stereotypes start to play into it. Mm. My mum was very clever. She, and, you know, tip to parents everywhere, she used to say every time I'd say, I think I want to give up, she'd say, that's fine. She'd say, but we've paid until the end of the term.
Mm.
So that's fine. Just do the rest of the term and then, you know, you can finish then. And invariably, I mean, I feel like this probably happened 3 or 4 times. Invariably by the end of the term, you know, either something had happened or, you know, and I'd felt really good about it or I was enjoying it more or I'd just kind of forgotten that perhaps I wanted to give up. And then she'd pay for the next term and on we rolled.
Yeah, and I think that's, I mean, observationally for me now as a studio owner, some parents still take that approach, but a lot don't. As soon as a child starts to, you know, say those things, there's often a like, oh, well, we'll stop then. I'm not going to pay for something if you don't want to do it. And they don't really unpack what that is about or see it through in terms of, because sometimes it is just tiredness, overwhelm. Yeah. Maybe something's gone on that just needs to be some kind of resolution. Yeah. You know, like I just feel now there's often that sort of pulling the pin is a really quick part of the process.
And I think agree.
Back, yeah. And I think back then too.
You go.
Sorry. I think back then too, because we only did one thing, right? You only did dance. My PT instructor was laughing at me this morning because she was making me throw a ball against the wall. I'm like, are you kidding? I'm like, I didn't do ball sports. I was a dance. Don't make me throw and catch a ball.
Yep.
She was laughing, but it's true. Like, that's all I did.
Yeah.
So whereas now they're bouncing in between so many different things.
And I have mixed feelings about that because, you know, there is a lot to be said for choosing your own thing. You know, I did ballet and I did piano. I actually wanted to do guitar. And my parents knew that, but there was a piano teacher nearby and my older sister did piano, so I did piano. Now, do I mind that? Ultimately, no, because I still play piano most days.
Yeah, right.
And I'm really, you know, I play and my daughter sings and, you know, like I really appreciate the fact that I actually did develop that skill. Would I prefer that it was guitar? Look, that would be fine too. You know, but with dance, I'm really glad my mum took that approach because it did see me through. I wouldn't have done other sport. I was, you know, was not a sporty person. And I always say, and look, I actually think it's probably true. I think that I probably wouldn't be fit. Like now I can turn my foot, I was going to say turn my hand, but, you know, I can turn my feet to dance. You know, I can, if there's a requirement to, you know, and this has been all through my life, is there a requirement to, you know, join a Zorba dance or a waltz or a, you know, pick up the latest moves in the nightclub or, you know, whatever it was in whichever stage of life. I can do that, you know, I can, because I've done so much dance. I actually say I don't think I would have even been very coordinated if I hadn't done that. I'm not very, you know, I'm not good at ball sports. I'm okay at tennis, you know, but I think without dance I probably wouldn't be as physically adept as I'm not saying I'm very physically adept, but I'm saying I would be less if I hadn't danced.
Yeah.
And I do remember another time, speaking of the giving up wishes in adolescence, was that I did actually give up jazz for a while. So, you know, as we got older, we'd sort of add jazz in and, you know, I did character for a little while and I never ended up doing tap, although I reckon I've got quite a few of the moves, you know, down pat in the kitchen. But at one point I really did, I mean, I'm not a natural jazz dancer at all. And so I did give up jazz for a while. I clearly got to the end of the term and had retained that. And I still remember the conversation with Laurel, who was my very first teacher, who was mainly a jazz teacher. And I had to tell her that I was giving up, and I was mortified that I had to tell her that. Like, I was really, really upset. But it was the right decision at the time because I was feeling so awkward. I'd probably just moved up to the senior classes. I was feeling so awkward. But then I picked it up again a couple of years later. And that was great.
So even the fact that you – did your mum make you do that? Did your mum say you have to go and speak to the teacher?
Yes, she did. Yes. She did.
Oh, I love old school parenting. I love it. I love it. That doesn't happen now. No. That doesn't happen. People don't do – they'll just send a quick – fire off an email and, you know, the child doesn't say anything or I think sometimes it's the way that we communicate now, it's too – almost too easy. But I love that you were made to do that.
Point. Yeah, yeah, it was really hard because I remember. But, yeah, I do think it was good. Yeah.
And so, Viv, once you sort of – you went through dancing, I know you're an exceptional academic student as well and did very well in, you know, your studies and went on to university and became an occupational therapist. And I think it was around that time that you and I started to – connect a little bit more then through our study to become qualified ballet teachers. And I loved that time that you and I spent when we were studying for our associate level qualification. That's when you and I really connected through that.
Absolutely.
What made you then pursue that part of dance in terms of becoming a teacher and whilst you were still, you know, going off and becoming an occupational therapist and doing all of those things?
I originally I think I thought I wouldn't teach. You know, my sister, again, my older sister led the way and she actually did her associate. I think she had to get special permission to do her associate. She was only 17, I think. And I was not keen to follow that. I wasn't that keen on teaching. But, yeah, just as I went through university, I can't even, to be honest, I cannot remember what made me decide to do it. I think I just got a bit more involved in the overall life of the school. And I think I'd just grown up a bit, you know, and was maybe just a bit more ready to take on some responsibility. And the idea of, you know, cementing all of those years of experience through the teaching qualification just felt right. And then, having a study buddy, you know, made me keep going. And it was really good. And, I mean, I never even taught that much. I would say I probably only taught at maximum a couple of classes a week. I never did that fully. And I was very, I've always been a sleeper innerer. And so I, Miss B was a bit shocked, but I said, I'm not coming to the ballet school before like 11. On a Saturday. Like I was not interested in turning up at 9 o'clock.
Yeah.
And at that stage, I didn't have kids. You know, I didn't have nieces and nephews. The idea of the preschool, the little teaching the little kids didn't appeal. Whereas now I just it's glorious and, you know, I really enjoyed the times I've done that. But at that time I was not interested either in the hours or the
the little kids.
Or the,
I always love that about you.
Sorry, go for it.
Yeah. I always love that about you, Viv. Like, you're always really good at advocating for yourself. I was not terrible. It's taken me a long time. I'm very good now. But I always really admired that in you, that you were very firm about this is what I'm prepared to do and how I want to do it. And, you know, I've always had a lot of respect for you being able to do that. And it's certainly, you're a great role model for me around those things.
Thank you. That's
lovely. We never said that to you.
Thank you.
Because I was just like, oh, she said jump on, do you want to jump how high? To my detriment, because then, you know, not being able to balance things very well.
Yes.
So Talk to me about, obviously you've weaved a, you know, a really interesting path with your career through being an OT and then a research assistant for a while, and then really following your passion of writing, because you've always been a really passionate writer.
Yeah.
So talk to me about how you sort of carved that path and what you took from your experience as a dancer into that area of your career.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the first thing to say is that I've kind of always felt like a part-time occasional teacher, you know. I've dipped in and out of it. So, you know, I taught, you know, in through my early and mid-20s until I went overseas for a couple of years. I took my ballet shoes with me when I went overseas. I don't actually think I used them. But, you know, they came with me just in case. And then when I came back, I did make a conscious decision to try other things. You know, time is limited by the time you're sort of working, you know, nearly full time. And I did make a conscious decision not to return to teaching in order to, you know, join choirs and go cycling and, you know, do other things. But then when I had my own children, and oh, look, I suspect it was Miss B saying, hey, if your daughter's going to be coming to classes, how about you do some teaching? And so I came back and did the preschool. And by that stage, I was steeped in that, you know, that developmental stage and, you know, the joy and difficulties of little kids. So really loved doing that preschool teaching. You know, I remember, you know, in my Heidelberg and District Ballet School wind sheeter over my very pregnant belly with my second child, you know, teaching the little ones.
Love it.
And then so I came and went from that. And then when I moved up north to the Byron area, after I'd been here for about a year, I connected in with a local dance school and started teaching there. And then I also do dance school photography. So even though I'm not, I actually did do 2 years where I was a teacher and the photographer. I only had taught like 3 classes, but man, that was intense when you're trying to photograph all through the dress rehearsal and check out how your dancers are doing on stage. But I've done that now for, I think this is going to be my 10th year of photographing the local dance school at their dress rehearsal. And so that just keeps, even though I'm not teaching, I'm you know, involved in that world still. That's really, really delightful.
Yeah. So
on a very practical level, you know, that dance teaching experience, and that's morphed into the dance photography, is an actual part of my life and has come and gone. But in terms of the kind of, you know, one step back ideas, you know, I think, you know, I think there is something about that doing something and doing it well and following it through in your childhood, adolescence and early adulthood. You know, no, I never danced professionally. That was never a goal, you know, that was never going to be a thing. But to teach, and, you know, the Shaketti Associate is very rigorous. You know, it's not just I think I'll just pop in front of a class, you know, and tell people to do some pliés. You know, it's a very rigorous qualification. So, you know, I think that experience of seeing something through has been really helpful as I've gone into different careers. You know, I think on a personal level, just being able to move and dance, you know, my current exercise regime is to bung on a song, usually from the 1980s, and just literally, you know, no cameras, no Lycra, but just literally dance it out in the kitchen or, you know, behind me here in the study, just to counteract the, you know, sitting down and staring at a computer all day.
Yeah.
And feeling like I can really get a sweat up in 3 minutes.
I love that.
And then, yeah, just the, you know, just the friendships and the connections. And, you know, you and I are very fortunate that we have this history with a dance school that has just celebrated its 60th anniversary. And 65. I've been 65. Oh, my goodness. Thank you. 65. Oh, jeepers. Yeah. And I've been involved in that school for 51 of those years. Now, sometimes I haven't been involved on a weekly, monthly, or even annual basis, but I have that connection from that length of time. So,
I think strong, strong community, isn't it? Like when I look at the school and what it's created, and the gala that we were both at just recently, I mean, it was just like everyone just went boom straight back into their little cohorts. I mean, there was sort of, you know, people from different eras in time. Yeah. But to see everyone come back together like that and just feel like they were coming home, I think that's something really special and unique about
absolutely
grew up in. Yeah.
And because of my sort of, you know, starting at age 3 and not teaching until my 20s and then coming back, you know, as a young parent, you know, we were talking about this at the gala, but, you know, I cross so many generations within school.
Yes.
You know, I have actual direct connections, you know, with older generations who were the ones I looked up to and admired, and then, you know, my own group. But then as you move through and the generations kind of collide and collapse because there's fewer of you, and then, you know, some of the, you know, divine seeing a couple of the kids that I used to teach.
Yes.
And you know, seeing them. So really, really special.
Yeah, it is a really special thing. And it's something that, I mean, I could only dream of emulating through my school, but I hope that that's what I'm imparting, excuse me, to my students, is that idea of that, you know, dance isn't just about learning the steps, that you're actually there as together as a network, and forevermore you'll be connected in a way that I think beyond that, what you find at being going through school or anything like that, dancers are connected in a really unique way.
Yes.
Really,
well, I'm going to a school reunion coming up, and I'm really interested in it and I'm looking forward to it. But it's with sort of a bit of slight trepidation and slight disconnection. You know, I'm interested to meet these people. I've obviously got my friends from school still, but to meet the wider cohort. Whereas going into that ballet reunion was just like, hey, hello, how are you? You know, this is amazing. There was not only a sense of trepidation. It was just like, all in, let me at it. Oh, my God, I can't believe the night's finished already.
Because, and isn't that lovely to think that that's how you felt walking into that environment? I mean, yeah, I feel the same about my school. Like, I have some lovely friends and beautiful connections, but there's also that, I don't know, there's that traumatic part of high school that you're just like, I don't think I want to go there. I don't want to bring that up. I don't, you know, those feelings are still there.
There are people at school who, I mean, you know, we spent a lot of time in the same place. And some of them I'm seeing, they're coming to the reunion. I barely remember.
Really know.
Yeah. And I don't know if I've ever spoken two words to them.
Yeah.
Whereas from the ballet connections, even if I don't know much about them and their broader life, you know, we were in the line together, or we did that amazing choreography together, or, you know, backstage we had that shared experience together.
Bonded forever with Cedal pink hairspray. It's that smell, isn't it? It's like, oh, that's the smell.
Absolutely.
Oh, gosh. We're all the same, aren't we? Well, Viv, it has been so wonderful to chat to you all the way from sunny Byron Bay. Very envious of you living up there at this time of year. It's absolutely, the sun is shining, but it is absolutely freezing in Melbourne right now. I do have my UGG boots on and the heater on. So it's been really lovely to speak to you. And thank you so much for sharing your insights and experiences. And that's really what this podcast is about, is exploring how we take all of those experiences from dance and translate them through our lives. So I really appreciate you sharing that with us. And can you tell us how people can find you to look up your writing? What's the best way to connect with you?
Absolutely. My online and writing world lives at very simply vivianpearson.com.
Perfect, perfect. And yeah, always love reading your articles. They pop up every now and then in our papers, and yeah, they're always really beautifully written. And I'm sure you will be writing for a very long time to come.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Mel. It's been a joy.
Thank you for joining me on this episode of the Transformative Dance Podcast. If you enjoyed the episode, be sure to subscribe and leave a review and share it with our dance community. You can find us on Instagram at transformative.dance for updates, behind the scenes content, and more inspiring stories from the dance world. Remember, dance has the power to transform lives, not just through movement, but through the connections, stories, and growth that it brings to us all. Until next time, keep dancing, keep growing, and keep embracing the transformative power of dance.